and welcome to Massage Therapy Radio. This is your host, Don Dillon, and tonight's topic is Find and Keep Great Associates. This seminar is part of a 12-week series entitled 12 Weeks to a Better Massage Business, produced by MT Coach. Our guest tonight is Jim Smythe. Jim is the author of a new book called Find and Keep Great Associates. He graduated in 1991. He is certified in NISA and has studied the St. John's Neuromuscular Therapy Method. He has supervised student clinic at Sir Sanford Fleming College for 5 years and was the OMTA, that's the Ontario Massage Therapist Association, chapter representative in Kawartha region for 7 years. Jim has also worked as part of the DAC, that's the Designated Assessment Center team in Peterborough for 3 years. Jim owns and operates a large clinic in Peterborough where he has 7 massage therapists working with him and a fitness facility on site. Jim, I am so happy to invite you to the show tonight.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Don. I've been looking forward to it for a while.
My first question, of course, is why didn't you write this book 12 years ago when I really needed it?
That's a very good question. I was still finding my way around at that time as well, doing more work than I really wanted to do and, you know, struggling to find associates.
Well, we've got, I think we've got a pretty full program. There's quite a few questions we have here to field, so why don't we get right into it?
Okay.
Can you tell me, first off, why is it so important to find the right associate to work with?
Well, the basic answer to that, Don, is that it affects every aspect of the clinic operation. So you need to find the right associate because it's going to affect you. The bottom line is going to affect your daily operation. You need a good working relationship within the clinic. You need a sense of cooperation within the group. You need people to help each other. And the client base would also be able to access another good therapist, you know, so you have another skill set available to your client base. If you bring in a new associate that's the right one, then there's minimal disruption, especially when the new one comes on board. People are, you know, they're well-trained, they're peers, they respect each other. The short and the long-term viable clinic viability of the clinic is enhanced if you get the right person on site. So you've got an additional skill set. The long-term viability of the clinic is going to be enhanced, and there's minimal disruption. So take your time and find the right associate.
I'm just thinking about a clinic the size of yours with 7 or more therapists working in. It's not only important to find the right associate to work from the clinic manager point of view, but really how they work with everybody else. You've made that very clear. That relationship is key to find the right person to fit into your clinic style. Now, I'm imagining that there are some really severe consequences if you bring the wrong person into the group.
Absolutely. A good number of unsavory things can happen in this case. Like, the first casualties are usually cooperation and teamwork. Nobody gets along. Bickering and mistrust, they start to manifest, and you've just got an atmosphere that's thick. The owner-manager at that point is going to be spending far more time putting out fires and refereeing disputes when he's supposed to be building business and treating patients or planning ahead, you know, looking towards the future. If you're putting out fires, you can't do those jobs. And eventually the clients will get a sense of the unhealthy atmosphere, and that will lead to the business falling off. And eventually that's going to affect the bottom line, the viability of the clinic. The long-term effects can be disastrous, especially if the wrong person is brought into play.
So it's not only going to affect that relationship between the clinic manager and the associate, but it's really going to impact the business as a whole, the way that the clients or patients feel when they walk into the business, the interactions. It sounds like it can have disastrous results.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's two of you there, then you can, you know, and you're the owner, you can certainly deal with it quickly. But, you know, the wrong person in a group can certainly stir up a lot of trouble, and it's very hard to deal with that situation. So you need to be clear about who you're bringing on board and where you think they fit within the organization.
Now, how can we be clear about that, Jim? Can you have some recommendations about what kind of qualities go into making a great associate?
Yes, I do. There are a number listed in the book that I've put together, but let's just talk about two key qualities. The first one I would talk about is communication skills, good communication skills. Nothing can be more important than the therapist's ability to communicate to the client, first of all, why they need the treatment, what the causes of the condition are, why they need to be treated, how many treatments are going to be required and how often, what role the client has to play in their recovery, and not to mention an explanation of how to do remedial exercise at home and then the general review thereof after the fact. So that's a key communication link that has to happen. If the therapist is not able to do that, then that client is going to go away bemused, not knowing what to do, go to the front desk and go out the door and not be satisfied. In addition, while you're doing the treatment, there's a need for ongoing communication throughout, before, during, and after. And that will also need to be followed up by communicating to the front desk what has transpired so that the client can be rebooked while you go on to begin another treatment with a different patient. And the whole process would just repeat itself again. So good communication skills, I think, are one of the top things that your new therapist should have. And an associate would also have to be able to express themselves within the clinic group so that their voice can be heard, so they can contribute, so they can feel that they're on an equal footing with their peers. So communication is very key in that instance as well.
Jim, would you share that story that you shared with me where you were having regular meetings which allowed the associates to all communicate and then someone had complained they wanted to stop them and some of the results of that. I think it's a great example of why communication between the different individuals working within the clinic is so important. Would you just share that story?
Well, sure. That was some time ago. We were having regular meetings at the clinic. And, you know, therapists tend to work 2 days, 4 days, that sort of thing. So attending a meeting is not always convenient. So a number of them did want to attend meetings. In fact, they wanted to cancel the meetings. So after a number of requests, I decided to do that. We stopped having meetings for a while. It went on for about 6 months. But I could feel the pressure in the clinic just building. Like people had nowhere to voice their views. They couldn't speak their minds among their peers. And the working relationship just got tougher and tougher to maintain. So finally, I decided, well, we're going to have the meetings anyways, whether they want to attend or not. So I re-implemented the meetings, and it didn't take very long at all before everyone was talking to each other again, and you know, spirits became uplifted. And we got on working better as a team. So that was a real live experience for me, and I don't think I would go back to that ever again. Hmm. I think that monthly meetings or regular meetings of some sort are primary in keeping the lines of communication open.
We think we're actually saving a little bit of time by not having those meetings, but, boy, it sounds like the consequences of not meeting on a regular basis can be quite large.
Yes, I agree. They can be, and you can't avoid the meeting process. You can't. You have to stay in contact.
Now, what's
individually
the second quality?
And as a group.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jim.
Individually as a group, you have to be in contact with your people.
So good communication skills, that's one of the qualities you wanted to talk about. What's another quality?
The other quality that I lean towards is continuous learning or continuous education. We both know that our college requires us to obtain about 33 hours of continuing education credits over a three-year period. But you and I also both know that that's not nearly enough to be on top of our game. In my opinion, a good associate will seek out ways to improve their skills on a regular basis by taking upgrading courses in their chosen area of expertise. And those who choose not to upgrade will gradually see their skill levels erode, and eventually this will be seen as a potential loss in clientele and referrals. Those who take postgraduate courses will see their skill levels enhanced, and they'll eventually be seen as real experts by their clients and their peers. Respect is earned and opinions are sought from someone who makes continuous learning part of their professional life. And I really believe that, and I look for that in any individual that I'm talking to.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim, you and I have both invested quite heavily early on in our skill set, and I think it made a real difference in terms of the fees that we can charge now and the real marketability that we have in the marketplace. So I think that's a very important consideration, is that all the therapists are continuously learning, building on their skills.
Yeah, and I refer to about six other skills that I think are needed for an associate.
Now, Jim, you do a fairly extensive interview process. I'm wondering what happens when you bring on a new associate? What's the best part of that interview process?
Well, Don, the best part of the interview, what I think is the best part of the interview process, is hands down the sample treatment. It's my favorite part, and I think that whoever's listening, it will become one of theirs as well. And you can handle the sample treatment in a couple of ways. You can get on the table yourself and judge based on the experience of the individual that you're hiring how well they're going to do. Years of experience are essential to making the judgment, because sometimes it takes people a long time to find the skills in their hands, but they could have skills in other areas. So you have to keep an open mind and try to determine if an individual with, say, only 3 years' experience who is willing to take courses and be dedicated to craft might be a better choice than a candidate with far more experience who's lost interest in the continuing education development. The quality of touch can always be is an individual thing, but it can always be felt through the hands. The second way you could approach this part of the interview process is you could have someone else have the treatment. One of your colleagues could receive the treatment and then give you their assessment. This can be as effective as well, because it takes your biases out of the process. I believe there are only two therapists in my career that I have not got a treatment from before they joined our clinic. And in both of those cases, I was able to watch those therapists work. So I believe a sample treatment, or being able to see someone work, is a very integral part of the interview process. You're never going to know how good an individual is unless you've experienced their sense of touch, the flow of the treatment, and their inter-client conversational skills. So you either have to get the treatment or see the treatment or have somebody give you feedback on the treatment.
I really like your idea about involving your other associates and having them receive a treatment and giving their perspective, because we know in the marketplace and other industries, people will go through two or three different interviews by different individuals in that business to make sure that they've got the right fit, because it's very expensive to put someone in and they're not being the right fit. So I really like your idea about how you get a chance to see their clinical presence by them providing a sample treatment and then your associates as well. Now, Jim, you and I have taught this clinic manager, success strategies for a clinic manager workshop, and I remember one therapist raised an objection about this sample treatment. And, you know, there are probably some people out there saying, well, I don't know if I really want to give a sample treatment, or why should I be required to give a sample of my treatment? You know, an orthopedic surgeon doesn't give a sample of their service. What would you say to that?
Well, if people feel strongly in that direction, what I would suggest is you could trade with that individual. You could offer them a treatment in return for them giving you a treatment. That's one way to get around that roadblock. Or another way is you could pay them for their time if the eventual decision was to go that route. You know, if they came on board, you could pay them, or if they didn't come on board, you could pay them. I mean, you are getting a treatment, and they are professionals. But most people, most professionals coming for an interview respect the fact that you want to know how well they work and how they work. So in our profession, it's hands-on that count. So I think that getting a treatment is not out of line. So I always ask for a treatment, and I've never had anyone refuse.
That's an excellent argument. Maybe this is a good time to tie in a question from our audience, because it kind of fits along this line. We got a question from Judy, who lives in Madison, New Jersey. And she's asking, how do you determine the How do you determine the ongoing quality of your therapists since their work is not directly supervised?
Well, you can see that in a number of ways. It's easy to determine ongoing progress with a therapist. You can look at retention rates, for one. Do people come through the door? They're given treatment plans. They come back. if they don't come back, there's something not really working very well. Another aspect is you can get on the table. I often trade with the therapist at work. In fact, I do that on a regular basis because I need treatment as well as anyone else. In fact, on the outside, it's 2 weeks before I get a treatment. So that's another way to tell how well that treatment is going. Some people don't want to trade with you, and that's fine too. But if you look at the stats, you know, we have a patient booking system that gives you a lot of stats. And as manager, it's your responsibility to see what those stats tell you. If you want the clinic operation to be viable, you owe it to yourself and everyone in the clinic. So you would look at the stats, and you can see if someone is having trouble retaining patients or not. And you can sit down and talk with them. And that's one of the ways that I use to determine how things are going. And that interaction, that meeting process, tends to draw things out.
Sounds to me like you've got a lot of checks and balances in place that although you're not there directly watching every treatment of the associate, you've put in a variety of checks and balances, either their retention rates or getting regular treatment from them or other associates or staff getting treatment. It sounds like there are you have a number of ways to be able to check and see what a person's clinical presence is like, their ability is like. You've built that right into the model.
Absolutely. And because I'm at the clinic every day, you're interacting with the people all the time, so you get a feel for the way they communicate, for how they treat their clients, how they handle their clients. So it's the fact that I'm there all the time, which I think that every clinic manager, owner, leader needs to be, gives me an advantage. And I use that advantage. Like I look to my people. I want them to flourish, and I also want the clinic to flourish. And I, you know, so if there are problems that I see coming up, then I try and deal with them as quickly as I can.
Now, Jim, your book in the appendix has 45 questions that you can use during the interview process or for checking references. Can you Can you tell us what kind of questions, what sorts of questions you ask during the interview?
Certainly. Initially, I like to ask questions that give insight into their values and their interests because it's important to find out how well their values will match with the clinic ideology. I also pose questions that can describe critical situations. For example, if a client has canceled in the afternoon because they had to take their child to the hospital, how would you respond to that situation? So you can get a feel for whether the therapist is concerned about losing money, whether they have care for the client, and how they're going to follow up with the client, if they are, in fact, even going to do that. So both of those types of questions can get to the values and the interests of the client. In the book, well, I've already spoke that I provide a long list of questions that you can ask. Dealing with the client, first of all, I deal with the client's last, the candidate's last position, and then a list pertaining to the current position. So you get a feel for how they performed on their last job, and you get to find out how well you think they're going to perform on this job. And you can compare the answers because when you go to check the references, you're going to ask similar questions when you check the references. So that is a key aspect, and that is the closing aspect of doing the interview process. You must check the references. I've checked every reference that's been given to me. Not every single one that the therapist gave me, but I've checked references. That you need to get a feel for how they operated in the last job to see if they're going to flow into the new job and do what they say they're going to do.
Now, Jim, you and I know that turnover is a big problem in this profession with losing associates. And as you're describing the questions, I'm just thinking, do you think that in many cases, the clinic managers may not be asking enough questions, may not be doing that evaluation up front thoroughly enough, maybe a little bit too motivated to bring someone on to fill that slot? Do you think that might be a common problem out there?
That would very much be a problem. In fact, when we first started our clinic, that was my problem. There were not as many schools as there are now. There were not as many therapists available, and I had a space to fill. So once or twice, I took the leap, and I shouldn't have done that. you know, I overlooked a few things and I learned my lesson, which is one of the reasons that this book came into existence.
Hmm.
Once you learn a lesson, you tend to remember. So yeah, I think that is very possible that people don't do enough research on the people that are going to bring into the clinics, and turnover can be very large.
Yeah.
The people at our clinic, like I've got like two or three of them been there like 9, 10, 12 years. So the longer, if you have a good therapist and the longer they stay, the more effective they're going to be, the more productive your clinic is going to be, the more viable it's going to be.
Wow, 10 to 12 years, that's a tremendous amount of time to have an associate.
It is.
That's a tremendous retention.
Well, I don't think of it as tremendous retention. I think it is normal.
I guess you've built a relationship, haven't you?
Yes, that's
yeah.
the idea. You build a relationship and you work on it.
Hmm. Well, now we've been talking about interview questions as a way of assessing candidates. Now you've hired your candidate, so tell us a little bit about what do you do? Do you do anything special when the new person comes through the door, enters into the clinic, and becomes part of the team?
Well, I don't think I do anything special, Don. The most important thing I do is I make the associate feel welcome. I do the initial introductions, which I suggest that every clinic owner manager should do. Introduce the people to the key people in the organization and make sure they are shown all aspects of the operation, from filing and client processing right down to where the linens, oils, and the washrooms are. You know, you just need to make people feel like they're at home, and that's what we try to do. If you start people off on the right foot, it's the key to building harmony and cooperation among all members of the clinic. You know, a new person coming in, like, people like to look after them. And if you've done your homework up front and the values are close, then people get to like each other very quickly and they get to work and help each other. So making them feel welcome, I feel, is the key to get the thing started.
It sounds to me that when you bring on an associate, it's like a mentorship or a coaching kind of role. Do you see the clinic manager owner taking this kind of role of being a mentor or a coach during the associate's tenure?
Absolutely. I think that's an ongoing process. The role of the clinic manager is mentor and relationship builder for the new associate and for all members of the team. And to do that role, you've got to interact with team members and get the team members to interact with themselves. So you've got to initiate the dialogue. You have to set the time aside to work with the people, and you have to go out of your way to build the relationships and be available for consultation. If you don't do this, then things are not going to work as well as they could. It's your job to draw out the best in people, to get them to work in harmony, allow them to speak freely, and speak without fear of reprisal, and to help them overcome any weaknesses that they may be holding them back. So that's an ongoing job that starts the day they come through the door as an associate, and it lasts until the day they leave. And sometimes it'll last longer than the day they leave. It's a difficult role, but if you choose to be a clinic owner and manager, then it is your responsibility to step up to these challenges and these responsibilities. You've got to do that.
So it sounds like you're telling the clinic managers out there, or potential clinic managers, don't just intend to just rent out some space. You really need to take an active role in the relationship you're building with this associate.
Absolutely. You are not renting out space. You are bringing someone into your clinic to help you build your business and help them build their business. So it's a working relationship. You're not just renting space.
Jim, we're down to the last few minutes of our show tonight, and we have another question that I want to get to. But before we do that, I think we should take this point to have a draw prize. So you're offering a draw prize tonight, a copy of your new book, Find and Keep Great Associates, the e-book. And I'd like to do that right now. So I'm going to ask people that are on the webcast page. You'll see Jim's picture and the description of the course tonight in the bio, and you'll see a big button that says Find and Keep Great Associates. I'd like you to click on that button. And I have to... hit to that button myself. So click on that button that says Find Keep Associates. And then you'll come to a website page that talks about Jim's book. And it says, what's in this ebook? Now, I'd like you to look down at the sixth point. There are 9 points. I'd like you to go down to the sixth point. That's what's in this ebook. And I'd like you to type out the fourth and fifth words. So there's a sentence there, one of the benefits of this book. The fourth and the fifth word in this on this page. I'd like you to type that in, and to type it in, there's the Q&A box right on your broadcast page. Type it in there. Make sure you include your name and your city and also your email so that we can contact you to get you a copy of the book. So again, click on Find Keep Associates, the big button. Go to the page. Scroll down, find out what the sixth point is, and give us the fourth and fifth words. Type it in the Q&A section of the box. Give us your name, the city you're in, and your email address, and we'll pick a winner. Now, Jim, I want to come back to our questions here. Now, as an associate, what should I look for in a clinic owner or manager? So this is from the associate point of view now. What should a potential associate be looking at in a clinic and clinic manager of a location that they're thinking about coming into?
Well, I think they should be looking for similar values. I believe that the owner-manager must be committed to the welfare of the clinic community, and that includes respect for the individual and their right to express their views without fear of reprisal. And approachability is a key factor, because if the associate is not comfortable with the communication process, then a lot of issues may be overlooked or missed. So the owner-manager needs to be approachable, and the associate has to get that message, and that has to be given during the initial interview. So they must look for an indication that their values and their needs will also be met, and that they are similar to the owner-manager's and the clinic's values and vision. So the associate should look to see how well the values fit, I believe, how open the individual is that's interviewing them, and how well they're going to work together. And they can also get an indication of that by talking to the people throughout the clinic. And part of what I do on a typical basis is give the associate a tour of the clinic so they get to see where they're going to work and who they're going to be working with. So an associate, you know, could take the opportunity to talk to the individuals to see how things are at the clinic, you know, what kind of an atmosphere it is. So in the book, I also list for reference what I believe are the qualities of a great leader. And these three points are in there, as well as a number of others. So I think that the associate's got to look for values that match their own, what kind of a work ethic there is at the clinic, and what kind of vision going into the future that the clinic has that meets their needs.
You know, I think that's a very important point about this book, is not just from the position of a clinic owner or manager, but it gives an associate some real keen insights as to what they might look for in the interview process or approaching a clinic to be working. And eventually that associate may want to become a clinic manager themselves. So you're given a reference both of what to look for in a good associate, but also what to look for as the qualities of a great clinic manager as well.
Absolutely. It's a two-way street. It doesn't work unless it is a two-way street. So everyone's got to, we're here to help each other get along. So that's the way it has to be. You need to work with each other.
You know, Jim, you're always so eloquent. I mean, one of the things I really enjoyed about reading the book is you're so eloquent and speak from a position of wisdom and character. And I think we always focus on skills and knowledge, skills and knowledge, but the development of the person. I mean, I know I've grown as an individual who's taken on associates in my clinic, and I think you've done that as well. You really become a different person, don't you? When you put yourself out there and you bring people in to be part of your business. I mean, you become a greater person.
You do. You grow.
Yeah.
And you just grow. It's just a natural process.
Jim, we've got a winner.
Oh, we're doing
for your book. It's Elizabeth Seifert from Fredericton, out from the Maritimes, the Canadian Maritimes, and the proper the correct answer was associates values. Those were the words that I had asked our attendant. So Elizabeth was the first one to get the correct answer, and Elizabeth, we will be sending you a copy of Jim's book, Find and Keep Great Associates.
Did you get the email address and everything?
I'm sorry?
Did you get her email address and contact information?
Yes, I do.
Great.
So I want to thank everybody who put forth an answer in tonight's draw, and Elizabeth, I'm sure you're going to enjoy Jim's book. Now, Jim, we're down to the last few minutes. Is there anything that you want to say in closing?
Well, I would just like to say that the success of a clinic depends on a lot of factors, but most importantly, it depends on its people. If the people can work together in cooperation and harmony, then the environment will be healthy and everyone should prosper. Associates, staff, and clients in particular. So it's the people that make the difference. And that's what I would close with.
Great words to end on. I want to thank Jim Smythe, our guest tonight and author of Find and Keep Great Associates. Jim, thanks for being with us this evening.
Oh, you're welcome, Don. Thank you very much for having me.
Great interview. Lots of good content for our people out there. And I just want to remind everybody, of course, that you can, on your broadcast page, there is a link there to go to the replays. The replay of this show should be available in about 2 hours, and you can go back and listen to some of the other replays from the 12 weeks to Better Business, Better Massage Business. There's also a link there for feedback. Please send us your feedback about this and other shows. Let us know what you're thinking and what you'd like to see. Very much we want to make this a two-way dialogue, so please make sure you click on the feedback and give us an idea of what you're thinking. Again, congratulations to our winner tonight, Elizabeth Seifert from Fredericton, for a copy of Jim's book. And next week we've got a little bit of a surprise, Jim. I've got some, we're just firming it up, but we're going to have two special guests talking about Marketing 101. So I just want to remind everybody, tune in next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to talk about Marketing 101. This is Don Dillon from MT Coach, and I bid everyone good night.
Good night, Don.